Tonight, we have some very illustrious guests, and we are looking forward to an interesting conversation. Before we get to that, though, I do want to introduce members of the panel who are here, and there will be at least one, possibly two more, who will be arriving hereafter. So to my left, we have the Honorable Glenn Galbraith, who is the Cayuga Heights Village Justice. We have Mark Solomon, who's an attorney here in town. And to my right, we have Liz Thompson, who is the supervisor for the Town of Ulysses. And we have the Honorable Betty Poole, who is a Enfield Town Justice. We also expect momentarily Scott Miller, the Honorable Scott Miller, who's an Ithaca City Court Judge. I spoke with him earlier today, or yesterday, last evening, and he said that he planned on being here. And I believe Jason Leifer will also be appearing. Excused are Gwen Wilkinson, the district attorney, and she is excused with the absolute apology and very great reluctance on her part, but she's at some sort of a conference out of state. And Marianne Sumner may or may not be here later. I haven't heard. So with that, we have the agenda. Do we have any changes to the agenda? Any modification? All right, the agenda stands. How about the minutes of November 4th? Can we have a motion? You have them before you, and they've been circulated earlier. Mark moves. Any second?
Second.
Second by Betty. Any further discussion, modification, amendments, additions, what have you? Please note that at one point the batteries ran out on the tape player, but Marcia did her best to summarize the balance of that discussion, I think accurately so, but I just want to make sure everybody's satisfied. All right? Seeing that, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right. Now, we do have, at this time in the meeting, an opportunity for public comment. These would be for folks other than our guests. So if there's anybody here who would like to address the gathering briefly on any topic that has been engaged heretofore, we'd love to hear from you. Okay, it doesn't appear that anybody wishes to comment, though there are members of the public here, and we appreciate the vigilance of the public and the constant attendance of the public. There is no chair's report. We have connected with the law students. We've assigned some work based on our prior discussions to one of the law students, and I think we're trying to set up a meeting.
We are, for next week.
For next week, okay, fair enough. So, Joe, in fact, that's a good segue to you, so...
Yeah, that was really the extent of my report. I'm going to be a bit of a nudge, and I'm going to ask everyone who will speak tonight to speak into the microphones, because we do prepare an audio transcript of this, and it helps if you can use the microphones.
Okay, fair enough. All right, so tonight, we'll get to the meat of the meeting. We are very fortunate to have three folks here who I'm sure will add value to this discussion. And they are the Honorable Theodore Bauman, the Honorable Judge David Brockway, and the Honorable Sherry Davenport. And I'm going to allow the Honorable Bill Chernish to introduce these folks, and or at least Judge Bauman, and give us some background on him, and we'll talk about the others as well. Go ahead, Bill.
Thanks. Yes, I'm Bill Chernish, Town Justice in Newfield, and am pleased to be able to present these distinguished persons here today. The New York State Magistrates Association has taken a very definite interest in the discussions and the activities of the task force. The association has been in business a large number of years and represents town justices and magistrates, village and town justices, throughout the state. I'm sure that Judge Bauman will tell you how many years that they've been doing that and have been quite active in those things. Judge Bauman is from the town of Liberty in Sullivan County, which we all recognize is just past the Roscoe Diner and just before we get to Middle Monticello. He's president of the association now. Judge Davenport is from the town of Summerhill, which is just up the road in Cayuga County, and she is president-elect of the association. To my right is Judge David Brockway, who is not going to make a presentation, but I'll bet if you ask him questions, he'll be happy to respond. He has been on the Supreme Court in Chemung County, has been a family court judge, and currently serves as justice in the village court in Horseheads, and has been quite active in judicial affairs and judicial education for a number of years, and is a person that's known to at least two of the members of the bar sitting across the table from me. I am delighted that these folks are here to help with understanding some of the issues before the task force today. And without further ado, I will turn it over to Judge Bauman and Judge Davenport.
Good evening. As introduced, my name is Harold Bauman. I'm the town judge in the town of Liberty. And
Let me interrupt. I apologize for calling you a different name. It's Harold Bauman, and I apologize.
I like Theodore. It's okay. It has a nice ring to it. I've been a practicing lawyer for 45 years, and I've been sitting on the bench in Liberty for approximately 15 years. I recently assumed the position of president of the State Magistrates Association. I've been a member of the Magistrates Association for the last 10 years. And needless to say, I've had a lot of experience both on the bench and on the other side of the bench during the course of my professional career. To give you a little bit of background, before I became a lawyer, it's the truth, I wouldn't lie to you people, I was a rocket scientist. So I know a little bit about this from the scientific point of view and from the legal point of view. During the past 45 years, I've practiced before just about every level of court in the state, from the town and justice courts in the surrounding communities to the Sullivan County, to the county court, to the Supreme Court, to the family court, to the appellate division in about three of the four departments, and before the Court of Appeals. And needless to say, during the course of my professional career, I've seen all types of judges. I've seen judges who I try to emulate now because of their excellence and their brilliance. And I've seen judges who are somewhat less than excellent and somewhat less than brilliant. And that's at all levels, going to the Court of Appeals, our highest court, down to justice courts in various rural counties. I practiced before lay judges, and I practiced before lawyer judges in the town and village courts. And let me tell you, and I'm sure that Dave could verify what I say, having practiced perhaps not as long as me, but I'm sure as well as me. Now, by way of background, David drafted a position paper before the Dunn Commission, and I'm sure you know what the Dunn Commission is. It was a commission appointed by Chief Judge Judy Kaye to look into our court system on all levels, and analyze the town and village courts throughout the state. And David submitted a brilliant paper talking about justice courts, what the good things are, what perhaps things that may be remedied are. And Dave, do you have a copy of it?
You know, I actually do. Unfortunately, I did not think to make copies, but if
well,
somebody...
Well, I have a copy. Give me your copy, and you can make
a
copy.
I'll ask somebody. Copies, and then you get yourself.
That'd be great. Thank you.
Whenever you want to look it up on the website. Or
fair enough.
Because it's out there somewhere.
Okay. Now, I am sure that during the course of your prior proceedings, you spoke about lay judges and lawyer judges, and I'm sure that you spoke about levels of court, and perhaps it would be more efficient to establish a district court system. And I don't know how much you know about district courts, but I've practiced in Nassau County, where district courts became into being. But the thing that people don't know about district courts, it's not a panacea, it's not a cure-all. District court judges work from 9 to 5, and they work 5 days a week. In Nassau County, in addition to the district courts that handle felonies up to being waived to county court or pass indictment. They handle misdemeanors, but they don't handle vehicle and traffic matters, and they don't do arraignments. And lo and behold, they have district courts, and they have town and village courts as well. And I tell you, it's anything but a saving to have a combination of both. And they found that they could not do with district courts alone. They needed the town and village courts to fill in the gaps and to complete the justice system in their county. And I believe that Suffolk County, which is the county past Nassau on Long Island, has a similar system. And those are the only two counties in the state that have a justice court system. But as I said before, they still have town and village courts as well. And I do not believe that they've saved a nickel with their justice court system. Now, I brought some statistics with you that you may find very interesting. And that is complaints made against judges. I found that there are approximately 3,200 town and village judges in the state, and 332 complaints were made against these 2,300 judges, which is about 14%. On the Supreme Court level, they have 337 judges, and 302 complaints were made. That's 89%. I'm not saying that you can draw any conclusions that Supreme Court justices are remiss in conducting themselves in a proper manner, because I don't believe they are. But you can see that the percentage of complaints made against the judges was 89% as opposed to 14%. With regard to appellate division and court of appeal judges, there are 64 in number, and there were 33 complaints. That's 51%. County court, 127, and there were 165 complaints made, which is 133%. So if you analyze the ratio of judges to complaints, town and village judges is doing pretty well. Now, I'm not saying that it's a perfect system, the town and village judges, but I taught in Cambridge for a year, and I became familiar with the town and village judges and justice system that they have in Cambridge. And that's where our justice system came from. As a matter of fact, our whole legal system came from England. And there was a very, very good reason for that. When the English settled the Northeast, judges and lawyers came with them. And in addition to their clothes and their dishes and silverware, they brought their law books, which were written in England, and it was based upon English common law. And that's the way they practiced in the Northeast. And that's why where our legal system was derived from the English system. They still have justice courts in England. It's a little bit different. They have three judges. They're all lay judges, by the way. And they decide misdemeanor matters down. There's a district attorney who prosecutes the case, and of course a defense attorney who defends the case. And it's the district attorney's responsibility to tell the judges what the law is and whether there's any precedent for finding one way or the other. And I just bring that up to show how long we've been practicing in New York with town and village judges. This question, I think, came up. How long has State Magistrates Association been in existence? 106 years. And we've had town and village judges all along that 106-year period. As a matter of fact, it goes back to revolutionary times, town and village judges. And all along, when things were found to be remiss with town and village judges, and they were both lawyers and lay people, they didn't discard the system. What they did was tweak it a little bit and do what they could to improve it. And I would suggest to you that if you find there are some things in the town and village courts that you think need improvement, that's exactly what you should do. Improve them. Don't get rid of our town and village courts. They're the courts closest to the people. They're the courts that people can identify with. And over the years, I found that the people in the various counties I practiced in have been very satisfied with the convenience and the justice they received with the town and village justice system. Do you have any questions to ask of me?
I think what we're going to do, Judge Bauman, is we're going to wait until we hear from Judge Davenport and perhaps Judge Brockway, and then we'll open it up to questions, all right?
Fair enough.
Judge Davenport, please.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I would like to thank the committee for the opportunity to speak today. My name is Sherry Davenport. I'm the town justice in the town of Summer Hill in Cayuga County and president-elect of the New York State Magistrates Association. I also presently work for the Cortland County Attorney's Office, so working with the county legislature there, I have some familiarity with the inner workings of county government, so I'm hoping between the three or four of us we'll have a little different perspective on this current topic. The town I serve in as town justice shares a border with Tompkins County. I've worked in that court for 20 years. Many of the same defendants, attorneys, and involved agencies that appear in courts in Tompkins County appear before me in my court as well. I spend a lot of time in Ithaca and consider myself part of this community. I'm here to speak to this group as an advocate for Tompkins County's town and village courts. What I've read recently, as reflected in the local media, of the comments made about our courts by the people who have spoken before this committee has saddened and in many cases angered me. I would hope that this committee does not take seriously some of the anecdotes discussed by previous speakers. Most negative stories, I'm sure you found, lack factual support, and I wish that the positive stories of the interactions with our local town and village courts would be covered in the press as diligently. However, as we know, good news never seems to spur the same fervor as bad. So I would remind all of us of the quote of the chief judge, the administrator of the state courts, and the fact that we are charged with upholding the integrity and independence of the judiciary. It is what we all strive to do. For that reason, I would like to speak to what the present town and village court system means to the community and what we can do to make it better. I've spent some time meeting with and listening to the judges in Tompkins County. This is a group who I found is more than willing to work with county government to provide efficiencies within the structure of the current system. There are efficiencies which could be realized almost immediately. It would seem a better course of action to develop a collaborative and cooperative relationship with the entities that the county works with, rather than suggesting their demise. My reading of the charge for the task force was that you are charged with assessing the potential to improve efficiency and reducing costs through structural realignments of the justice courts within Tompkins County. The two primary charges were economy and quality. The resolution that the legislature recommended to establish this committee said that you were to undertake an initial exploratory review to determine if improvements can result from mergers, consolidations, shared services. I understand that, and I applaud your effort to do a close look. But my question to your task force is this: why focus on the structural realignment of the court? If your aim is to reduce costs, why not start with departments of county government that you control that work with the courts? Restructuring the courts on a single county basis would seem to be the antithesis of efficiency. Creating a larger bureaucracy, as Judge Bauman noted with the issue of district courts, does not better serve litigants. Perhaps an operational review of efficiency with all the involved agencies, including police, district attorney's office, assigned counsel, and others, including all the groups that interact with the court, would be a better course of action. It's a complex system with many moving parts. Changing one piece does not make all the others more efficient. A few of the suggestions that the judges that I talked with had brought up. First, coordination of court schedules. Alteration of a court day by some courts could ease the burden of conflicting appearance times for sheriff's transport officers, permit better use of their time. Second, there's a potential for the county to preside as a judge in another area, presumably under Justice Court Act 106, I know that Onondaga County, Rockland, Jefferson used this to allow judges to preside as a justice of their respective court anywhere within the county for the limited purpose of arraignment or appearances relative to bench warrants. While maintaining each individual court, they retain jurisdiction after that initial arraignment. This could be used in conjunction with a centralized booking or holding facility. There are a lot of things that could be done with calendar appearances, again, working with the police agencies, working with the district attorneys and the local bar. And another important piece of this, better use of technology. There's nothing that, I know that some of the previous complaints involved the issue of limited time and appearance time for the courts and access. The courts are working with limited resources. There are ways to make that better. So I think we could work on that. Early on, Mr. Marion mentioned that the town and village courts in Tompkins County cost these municipalities approximately $800,000 to operate. Like highway, fire, police protection, courts serve a greater societal purpose and should not have to be self-supporting. The revenue generated should not be a consideration for the continued existence of the courts. I would mention that courts in this county alone return $1.48 million to the state, county, and local taxpayers. Statewide, our town and village courts bring in $245 million. Our system of government is purposefully designed to keep courts separate and to be an independent branch of government. That system of checks and balances, the adversarial system that many people bemoan as duplicative and inefficient, maintains the balance of power and protects our citizens. It's always discussed how we can better serve those citizens, but no one branch should attempt to exert influence over the other. As elected judges, we're all accountable in our community. We take that responsibility seriously, and we always work to make the most effective use of limited resources. To quote Judge Littman, an independent, accountable, and co-equal branch of government, it is our duty to stay true to our core values and our constitutional mission. Our ultimate duty to the people of New York is to provide justice. That's what the judiciary is all about. When you give up on a town and village court, you sacrifice that local accountability. You take away the right to elect people from their own community. If you start down that road, you will have given away more than you can recover. I hope that the committee is mindful of that accountability when making a recommendation to the legislature. And I thank you for this opportunity to speak.
Thank you, Judge Davenport. And Judge Brockway, would you like to say anything?
Well, if you'll indulge me a little bit, I know I'm not on the agenda, so I don't want to take too much advantage of this, but first of all, I certainly ditto what the other judges have indicated, and including Judge Bauman's practice before the courts for, I think you said 45, I've been doing it for 40 years anyway, the first five as a full-time assistant public defender in Chemung County. And again, I appeared almost every night of the week, it seems like, in one justice court or another. After becoming a judge in 1980, would frequently, and I still do, as Professor Galbraith knows, still teach the town and village judges, as I did family court judges when I was there and so on. And I can tell you that, and I think this is almost without reservation, the non-lawyer judges, and I know there's part of this I think is driven by that whole concept of we needing lawyer judges, are somehow less good or intelligent or educated than their counterparts. I got to tell you, all these years, I have not seen any better group of dedicated people wanting to do the very best they can, learn what they can, attend these seminars, listen to me when I actually talk and not read the New York Times, which I encountered many times, as the lawyers seem to often do. And when I appeared in front of them, they were often more on the cusp of what was really going on in the latest cases and changes in statute than some of the lawyer judges. And so I'm very concerned when somehow the non-lawyer judges get bashed as a group, because it's not true. And Judge Bauman and I can both speak to that from personal experience. The other thing I wanted to point out, and I don't want to reiterate my testimony that I'd given to the Dunn Commission, but, you know, I've never seen anything go from local control, a local municipality's control, a town or a village, a city, up to a higher level and somehow become cheaper or less expensive or easier to run or more accountable. What happens is the control of the people gets filtered out, and instead of being a voice of one of 6,000 in a village, all of a sudden now you're one voice out of 80,000. What's your control there? Instead of being able to judge your judge every 4 years, as you currently can, all of a sudden you go to the district level, or even the state city level now, you're talking to every 10 years. You know, if there is a judge who's not doing their job, we have appeals. You take care of it there. If they're not doing their job because they're not being ethical or taking care of their educational obligations, we have a judicial conduct commission. And that applies to lawyer judges, non-lawyer judges. There are other ways of doing this than throwing your system out. Now, as far as being cheaper, consolidation is all this wonderful thing. First of all, it's contrary to everything our founding fathers fought the centralized king of England about 250 years or whatever ago it was. And there's a reason they got decentralized, so that the people could be heard and control their governments. We're undoing everything they did back then and shed blood for heaven's sakes. For example, in the court system, when we went from city judges, family court judges, county court judges that were all county level elected, all county level paid for, I'd hate to tell you, if you looked at those prices from 1970, even adjusted for inflation, what the salaries have done compared to when they were locally run, locally elected, locally paid for. The bureaucracy, as any of you who have dealt with OCA, Office of Court Administration, knows about, has just blossomed into a multi-million dollar business. That is not efficient, folks. Being able to go to your county or your town or village board and have your say is much more efficient, and you don't have all these layers of bureaucrats trying to make things work. It's very efficient, it's very quick, and it's very cheap, and you're trying to save money. When we went from deputies as our court security officers to state-paid court officers and state-administered court officers, all of a sudden, now all the same deputies who were protecting me in the family or Supreme Court, and were getting paid, I'll just say a number, $50,000 a year, and if I had a problem, I'd just walk down the hall to my sheriff and said, "Sheriff, I've got an issue with this, or can you help me out here? Can you do that?" Done. Now, I don't want to tell you what they get paid. I don't want to tell you what that did to the benefits cost to the taxpayers of the state of New York, and therefore also the county folks who pay. I don't want to tell you what it did to the retirement plans. I don't want to tell you what it did to the bureaucracy. Do you know what? After that happened, we went state control. My gosh, I had to go through, I don't know how many, I had to go through majors and sergeants and lieutenants and all this kind of stuff through in Binghamton. Now, how is that more efficient? How is that more quick? How is that more accountable to the people they need to do their jobs for? I can go on and on and on, but I've already gone over my time. But those are just some of the things I want to point out, and I think there's other things and efficiencies that you can look at to really get whatever your mission ultimately ends up being. But I cannot stress strongly enough my belief in local control of our governments, period.
Thank you, Judge Brockway. We're going to start from my left, and I want to welcome the Honorable Jason Leifer. He was just elected as the town supervisor for the town of Dryden. He's also a local attorney. And Jason's he walked in during the presentation of Judge Davenport, and perhaps if you want to pass, and we can start with Judge Galbraith. You have some questions? Good, great. Please, from the left.
Right. So, Judge Brockway, you just mentioned something about how the having the local courts offer some accountability, and people come to the town board and to get things done, I would say, if they have an issue with the town court. So what's your understanding of how a town board can affect how the town court actually operates?
Well, obviously, with the separation of powers, it's limited in terms of what. It's kind of a wide open question. I don't know what you would expect to have be possible.
Like, for instance, can we set the court hours at the town?
Actually, by statute, the court hours are determined by the courts themselves. I believe that's under the Uniform Justice Court Act. But you could do a legislative change, state legislative change, I suppose, to do that. But, hopefully you could sit down with your judges and suggest, there's other hours we ought to talk about. Could we do one day a week during the daytime in case people are working at night? Another thing about this is we're trying to help our citizens out. Making them, hopefully most of them are still working, to have them have to give up a day of work and to come in and sit in a city court, and I don't know about how it works in Ithaca. I don't remember talking to Judge Rosser about it. I was hoping Judge Miller might be here, Judge Miller.
Yeah, Judge Miller.
Because there's a Judge Miller in Binghamton, too. What happens is if you get a ticket or something like that and you're going to a city court or a more centralized court that's going to meet during the day hours, you could sit there for hours and hours and hours all day long. Some of them, I think, parse them out, but maybe the local judge, Poole, could clarify this. But, our courts are going to be generally quicker. And I think at hours that is frankly more conducive to most families' life.
Judge Bauman, you were going to follow up, I think, on that.
Yes, I just wanted to tell you that it's not just the judge that sets the parameters for the operation of the court. We work with the district attorney, we work with the defense counsel, and when we set times, we do it for their convenience as well as ours. As I said, this is a municipal affair, and the municipality depends upon the district attorney and the defense counsel to promulgate justice within the community. Also, we take into account the litigants, people from our communities. As Judge Brockway said, a lot of them are working, and we don't want them to take time off from work, and we will inconvenience ourselves in order to benefit them.
Mr. Leifert, go ahead.
You had talked about the Nassau and Suffolk County.
Yes.
Who pays for the district courts?
Who pays the district court?
Yeah,
they're state funded.
It's state funded, yeah.
And you mentioned that they still have town and village courts. So what kind of cases are they handling versus the district courts?
Good question. The district court will handle serious crimes. The justice court will handle vehicle and traffic matters. Local matters involving parking tickets and dog pooping cases and stuff like
ordinances,
that.
Ordinances, I think they do.
Yeah. And they're also involved in arraignments, which in my court, my police department makes approximately 1,000 arrests a year. And I would say 800 of those require an arraignment. And that's between my co-judge and myself. What else do they do? They're there serving the purpose of liaison with the community. The community sees a local justice. They vote for that local justice. They see him walking around town. They feel more comfortable with the local justice than they would with a state-paid judge.
Let's follow up on that, though. Who does the evictions in the district court versus the town and village courts?
Town and village courts.
Town and village. And how about the misdemeanors are all district court?
Misdemeanors would be district court.
So the town and village do not do the misdemeanors?
Well, they do the arraignments.
They do arraignments, but they don't prosecute.
They don't prosecute, right.
Or preside and prosecute.
They still handle the violations?
They would do violations.
The
town and village.
So what happens with the DWI, originally charged as a misdemeanor? You do the arraignment? In town or village court.
It would do the arraignment in the town or village court. And then, since it's a crime, an unclassified misdemeanor, it would go up to the district court.
And then, if it's reduced to a violation thereafter, it stays in district court. The adjudication would occur in district court.
That's right.
Go ahead, I'm sorry, we interrupted.
Sure. We talked about how much money, I think Judge Davenport mentioned for Tompkins County, about $1.4 million. I'm reading off of, just so the panel knows, I'm reading off of the 2014 Justice Court Fund Town and Village Report. That's,
that's where I got the figures from.
Just so folks know, the money that stays in the towns and villages that have courts is only $385,000. Okay, the rest of it goes to the state. The county gets $110,000 of that. The state $991,000. So, as sitting now that I'm going to be assuming supervisor's office, what I look at every year is about an $80,000 hole in my budget.
Well, it depends on the town or village. Some bring in more, some are less.
For Dryden, what we pay out in salaries to the judges and the clerks and court security, which we need in Dryden since we have, I think, the second or third busiest town court. I'm looking at Julia Hughes as our sign council coordinator. So seeing that, even though we get to keep about just shy of $81,000 in 2014, we still were in the red.
Well, then I would ask, what about your highway department? What about your police department?
What we're looking at, what I'm talking about here is we have a state tax levy cap and mandates. This is one of the mandated things. Would you support petitioning the state so that the localities can keep the funds up until, say, our cost before having to turn anything over to the state?
I think personally it's wrong that the state gets to keep the lion's share. I don't know if the position of a judge could be to advocate for bringing in more money.
Yeah, I think
there are limitations.
Yeah, I think we can talk about the administration of justice ethically, all right. And that's exactly one of the things I was going to suggest tonight to the panel, is that I think the Association of Towns, the Conference of Mayors, the Magistrates Association, and we can get an official opinion if you think we need to ethically. I don't think you really would, but we could. But I think we absolutely need to ask and demand more money out of all these court surcharges we are collecting. You know, when I started in 1980 as a judge, there was no surcharges at all. I mean, the towns and villages not only could very comfortably pay for their justices, and did, they actually made money, I think. And then I think the surcharges came in, I want to say 1983 or so, something like that. And it was $17 out of five, we kept five out of $17 that was totally charged. Well, now it's all the way up to $95. We still only keep 5%. You know, and it's another way I think the state is kind of coercing, if you will, the localities to get rid of their own governments. Well, not only are we going to kind of force it this way by not giving you the lion's share or even half of what you collect, but we're going to reward the communities who can get rid of layers of their own government, which I think is horrible. That's what we fought the British for, as I say. And so I think we really need to, there should be a lot of pressure, I think, put on the state to say, hey, instead of forcing us to do these 2% caps and rewarding counties and municipalities who get rid of their own governments run by their own people, how about we, you know, look at some other things, right, like sharing some of that money?
All right, Judge Bauman, go ahead, and then we want to keep this discussion moving. Go ahead.
I'd like to strike an agreement with you. If you write down on a piece of paper and get it to me what you would think is fair legislation with regard to sharing fees from the state, I will go to the legislative committee in the State Magistrates Association and make sure that that gets proposed in our legislation package.
Very good. All right. Glenn? Go ahead. Yes, Judge. Yep.
I was remiss in omitting something that I intended to speak about. The Dean Emeritus from Syracuse Law School wrote an article about the justice court system, and I would like to just share with you some of the portions of that article. I won't read the whole thing to you because it's too time-consuming. That's Dean Robert Miller. The justice court system in New York is a well-established, accepted,
open to the citizenry and is locally responsive to local needs. Justice courts have no calendar congestion, are inexpensive to the litigants and the taxpayers, and are easily accessible to all who seek its services. Justice courts provide an arrestee with the quickest method of placing a magistrate between him and the arresting officer and having his rights explained to him, and I cannot overstress the importance of that. Insofar as arresting officers are concerned, they need not leave the area of the arrest to drive to the county seat, as justice courts are sufficiently numerous to cut down on travel distance and travel time. To the lay justice, the position is prestigious and important and deserving of his best effort for local citizens are checking his performance. The justice is familiar with the local citizenry, their views, their needs, and is a better position to be responsive. And this is what I thought was the most important thing in the article. With the mandated training and retraining of lay judges as required by the Judicial Conference, a trained lay justice is capable of discharging the duties of the office, and the courts closest to the people will be improved. Where the decision of justice is questionable, the country court is available for correction on appeal. And this is someone who, as I say, was Dean Emeritus of the Syracuse Law School and was an advocate of the justice court system.
Very good. Thank you. Thank you, Judge. All right. Judge Galbraith.
One sort of specific question, then a general one. Do you know of any examples where they've used a centralized after-hours arraignment system where the judges sort of rotate through it, and maybe even the assigned counsel people rotate through it as well, where all the arraignments at night, et cetera, could be done in one location?
I've heard talk about that.
Any place where you know they actually
I don't know of any place in the state where there is a central agency to do arraignments.
Do you have any problem with
it? Do I have any problems with that? As a matter of fact, I do. We have a system now where town and village judges will get up 2 o'clock in the morning on a January night to come down and do an arraignment. How can you beat that? The person will be...
I can tell you how you might be able to beat it. Because a lot of times those judges don't get up or they can't be contacted. And then the officers have to go through a series of other judges. And some of us don't get called very often, and some get called a lot. And there, to some degree, I think there's some judge shopping going on by law enforcement. If, in fact, I knew I was to cover two nights a month or something, I'd be there, and I'd be ready to go, and I know that'd be my night. And I know the other nights, I probably wouldn't have to deal with calls. And it might be more efficient in that way. And I would be carrying more of the weight of those after-hour arraignments, which I should, but I'm not, because I think they're avoiding me. I think they're going to other judges.
But there's a responsibility of the law enforcement officer to come to the town where the crime was committed for the arraignment, or a town that's contiguous to that.
But then they have a lot of choices.
You just can't go around and search the whole community.
I know, but they can work the system.
And you could legislatively change the layout, I suppose.
We've had the administrative judge try to straighten that problem out in the past with moderate success. But that problem does exist. And the bottom line is, I don't get called that often, except by the police in my immediate jurisdiction, and I probably should be carrying more of a load.
And I don't think that's just unique for Tompkins County.
No,
I think that's statewide. It's very common.
Well, that's what I wanted. Judge Davenport, are you aware of any such system anywhere in the state?
The only thing that I'm aware of that's even close to that is what they do in Onondaga County, which, again, there was a legislative change that permitted them to have jurisdiction at arraignment so they could go anywhere you know, a judge could sit anywhere in the county. Okay. They weren't worried about that contiguous.
So the judges are fair game anywhere in the county,
right.
But there is no centralized booking place.
Correct.
All right.
That's
and
my understanding.
They might be able to shop.
Then
they exactly.
Can even more.
Exactly.
It's
which is why it's a problem.
Right. They do have limitations now.
Sure,
I'm going to
do.
Meet with Judge Kokoma, who's the administrative judge outside of New York City, and I will discuss that with him.
And something like that might be conducive to these smaller geographical counties like a Tompkins or a Chemung. But boy, you get up into Herkimer County, St. Lawrence County, you're not going to have some judge up in the corner of one county want to drive, you know, all night or an hour back and forth at 2 o'clock in the morning.
Go ahead.
Sure. Another general question. There were a couple suggestions of concrete things that we might do, or maybe town and village justice courts might do anywhere. But do you have any additional suggestions on things that might either save money or probably more importantly, improve the quality of town and village justice courts that this committee could focus on?
Well, I'll tell you what is done in Sullivan County. And specifically in the town of Liberty. We have, with regard to vehicle and traffic matters, the town attorney conducts the first interview with the defendant. And at that time, if there's any plea bargaining to be had, it will be done, you know, during the course of that meeting. And then the case would come to me, and I would either accept the plea that's arranged, or else I would not. But what the town attorney does in connection with reducing a charge, he reduces it to a charge where the municipality gets 100% of the money.
Of course, I think there's been some ethical concerns about that sort of arrangement. So
it's done.
Yeah.
And it's not been questioned.
Yeah.
Till now.
Well, and just for the record, can you tell us what some of those kinds of offenses would be? I mean, they must be pretty innocuous.
Well, no. Talking about a speeding charge would be reduced to a 1201A parked on pavement charge.
Right. So that's
non-moving violation.
Non-moving violation. And everyone walks out happy because there are no points and their insurance company doesn't find out about it. So they're thrilled.
And the town makes some money.
The town makes 100% of the money. Well, actually, with parked on pavement, there's a maximum fine of $150 with a state mandatory surcharge in the amount of $25. But the municipality gets $150.
I think some courts might not be happy about that. I'm probably one of them. I tend not to go along with plea bargains.
Well, you don't have to.
I know I don't have to.
You don't
but
have to.
I get some complaints that my court is so different than the other courts for that very reason. I tend to be a little more hard-nosed about it in the village of Cayuga Heights. Residential area, safety's pretty paramount. I'm not there to make money for the village.
Let me follow up on that, though. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Judge.
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, because I was going to move a little bit off of that point.
But I think that in and of itself emphasizes the need for town and village courts. You care. You live in the village. You care about your village and your residents. And you're closest to your residents. That way, if you have a resident that has a problem with cars going fast, or the school. You get someone in there, law enforcement's gonna monitor that school district, school's speed zone. They're gonna take it to you because you've heard the complaints. So therefore, you're gonna be more interested in enforcing that as opposed to a local district judge.
Thank you. Oh, good.
Or giving breaks, frankly, depending on the situation.
Exactly.
Giving breaks if the police are being overly aggressive or something and not realistic. So,
exactly.
But you're right. The point is, somebody who's from your area and is concerned about the justice they're getting is going to be more likely to have a sense of that than somebody who's miles away.
So, Judge Davenport, go ahead.
I was trying to relate that back to your previous point about concrete examples in, you know, in our individual counties. In Cayuga County, very long, very narrow lakes, east, west, and center, so we have some traveling difficulties for defendants. It, no bus system, north to south, it's very important to have a local, you know, local access for that. So one of the things we've done with our County Magistrates Association is we move our meetings all around the county. We invite all the shareholders. We invite the district attorney's office. We invite probation and, you know, state police, whoever would like to come. If there's an issue that arises during the course of the month, that'll be brought up at the meeting, and we know immediately if there's a problem. We had an issue with some court scheduling. We worked that out with the sheriff's department. They said, would you mind if we called your courts the day of or the day before to verify that prisoner transports were necessary? I think that's an excellent idea. They called, we verify. That way it avoids a lot of trips. We coordinated, again, court scheduling with adjacent courts, myself and a neighboring town. We have the same assistant district attorney who comes to our court. I go early at 5:30. She holds her court at 7. The DA makes one trip down, covers two courts. I mean, there are little things that can be very effective.
I wanted to kind of follow up, and this may touch on this a little bit. Are you familiar? I am familiar with, I know, in Seneca County, where the district attorney, because for whatever reason, publishes online the parameters for plea bargaining.
Cayuga County does as well.
And they do this for DWIs and I think primarily DWIs, but he also does it for speeding and some of the vehicle and traffic. Do you folks have any familiarity with that?
I know that I just found this out actually from a defendant last month that Cayuga County District Attorney's Office does that. They publish for V&T, not for DWI or criminal offenses, but they essentially give directions on how to contact their office by mail to make a request for a plea bargain.
That's not binding on the court, by the way.
No, it's not binding on the court, but it would save a fair amount of time and, frankly, would be helpful to litigants who cannot afford counsel or who are marginally able to afford counsel and trying to figure out whether they should hire a lawyer or not. If they just went online and they saw that if you had a 20 mile over the speed limit charge and it would be reduced to less than 10 miles over the limit, or if they found that a DWI with a 0.13 or 0.12 or lower is automatically reduced to an AI, obviously subject to the court's approval, those kinds of things strikes me would make justice more uniform throughout the county, and B, would make everything much more efficient, especially if the courts were to buy into it. But so you're familiar with it, Judge Bauman? Are you familiar with anything like that?
Well, I've heard about it, and I know that the Commission on Judicial Conduct has set forth parameters saying that it's not proper.
Okay.
It's not proper because it's the judge's responsibility to hear the case and to set down the parameters of guilt or innocence and what the fine and surcharge is going to be.
And when I say that they have parameters, I mean they tell the process. They don't guarantee, okay, if you're going 75, you're going to get a reduction to 64.
What do you mean it's improper? It's certainly not improper for the prosecution to set forth its office policies.
But what they're doing is they're advising a defendant on the internet. That's the impression I got from what you said. They're advising a defendant that if you agree that doing 75 and a 50 will be reduced to doing a 60 and a 50, you can't do that.
No, but they probably could put in that would be their recommendation.
Yeah,
to
the DA can do that as part of their policy and the recommendation. You're right.
To the court.
Yeah,
and subject to the court's
binding.
Approval.
Well, it's not binding.
Right.
But nobody has said it's binding.
Right.
Right, but I think there's a problem by notifying a defendant what the reduction is going to be, because he hasn't got the right to make a reduction.
He has the right to recommend to the court on behalf of the people of the state of New York what their office wants in this case. And if they have a uniform policy, there's nothing wrong with making that policy public.
I disagree with you.
Okay, well, you're wrong.
It won't be the first time.
This is something we can certainly do some research on.
There's some advisory committee ethics opinions on
all right,
that.
We'll look
so it'll that. Be spelled out and we'll clarify.
Glenn, both. It would be wrong for the judge to say, whatever the district attorney does is fine with me. That would be dead wrong. That would be terrible. I have a further question.
And you're up, so go ahead.
Judge Bauman, did I understand you to say that the town attorney meets
the defense all the traffic cases in your court? That's the first meeting where I've seen you?
Except for alcohol-related offenses.
Okay,
but Harold, I assume it's after they waive counsel and all that, right?
Well,
I
mean, I hope. Even with their attorney, they could be there, and he will review the case and make an offer.
What about without the attorney? I don't. Give me the sequence of events. Some clown is on 78,
okay,
and he gets stopped for going 85, and it's in your court. And he gets a ticket. And the ticket says on it, you can send this in by mail or you can appear. I take it you're talking about a situation where he appears. Personally.
First, he sends it to mail and by mail, and he will plead guilty or not guilty.
Right.
Okay. If there's a not guilty plea, he will be notified to come into court with the understanding this is not for trial. It's to speak to the town prosecutor.
This is a communication between your clerk and the defendant.
That's true.
Okay. Now he shows up.
He shows up and he sits down with the town attorney.
What's the position of the district attorney in Sullivan County about having a town attorney act in this capacity in that setting?
District attorney has advocated his rights to prosecute these cases. He doesn't want any part of it.
These are
so the district attorney has appointed the town attorneys, should they choose to do so, as prosecutors.
Okay.
And is that on everything, or is that just the local ordinance stuff?
That's on vehicle and traffic matters.
Vehicle and traffic, I got it.
Not including alcohol-related offenses.
This, I assume, follows from the change in respect to having one other thing. You said your police department. Does the town of Liberty have a police department?
The village has a police department.
And the village doesn't have a village Liberty court?
Oh, let me tell you about that. I was the village judge as well as the town judge in Liberty. And the mayor was running for office, and he seized upon an issue that there shouldn't be a village court because it costs $24,000 a year to run the village court over and above what the village was deriving in terms of income. And he won his election, and the court was dissolved. So now all matters from the village are now referred to the town. Okay?
Right.
The town gets jurisdiction over the...
You have jurisdiction over the village.
Over the village.
No village court.
Because the village is in the town,
right,
and there's no village court.
Right. Yeah, that's happened throughout this county.
Okay, but what was interesting is that, number one, the mayor did not tell the entire truth to the electorate, because 3 years before that, I got JCAP funding for the village, and the amount of $30,000 a year. Didn't mention that. After the first month that I was doing the village cases as well as the town cases, I sent a statement to the state controller indicating that we had fined $150,000. And I made certain to show that to the mayor, who then made an inquiry to the village attorney, how can we get the court back? So that's a mistake that they made, and they recognize it.
All right. I just have two questions at this point. Judge Davenport, you mentioned that perhaps we should be looking to other departments of county government for operational changes. Can you give me some ideas of what you're talking about?
Well, as I said previously, the district attorney's office, the assigned counsel, the sheriff's department.
Specifically, what is it that you think they could do to make things more efficient? Let's say the DA's office.
Let's say the DA's office. I can speak only of my own experience in Cayuga County. You're talking about uniformity and concern for the cases being decided evenly court to court. In Cayuga County, we have one assistant DA who handles DWIs throughout the entire county. Consistent dispositions. That has been really very helpful. We have, I think, one, maybe two ADAs who cover domestic violence issues. Again, consistent dispositions. The person who appears in our court can change, that assistant, but they're always touching base with that person who covers the particular topic. Again, but whether it's domestic violence, DWI, there's consistency there. So that seems more efficient to me for both the defendants and the court, because there's no question.
How about assigned counsel? I'm going to pick your brain, that's all.
Okay.
So.
Assigned counsel, again, as I explained, Cayuga County, very diverse area, very far-flung towns and villages. We have assigned counsel. Certain people will work certain areas of the county. We have attorneys who will, we have an assigned counsel program, not a public defender. We have attorneys who will work the southeastern part of the county. We have attorneys who work the northern part of the county. They're available. So if they're assigned on a random basis, maybe they would say, hey, Sterling's 75 miles away from Moravia. I'm not willing to go up there on, a Tuesday night at 8:00. There are things that can be done. Again, simple scheduling things.
And how about, I don't know, did you mention probation? I can't remember.
Probation. One of the things we just started doing, which I think has been really helpful, is emailing our information, pre-sentence reports, emailing them to the probation department. They have them immediately. There's no 3 days in between getting them there, getting them back. We all have nycourt.gov email accounts, with the exception of communities that maybe don't have high-speed internet where they can make that transaction work efficiently. There should be no question that those things can happen electronically.
And you mentioned police agencies. How can we do that?
Police agencies, we have only state police and sheriff's department in my town. They work together pretty well. I don't have a lot of interaction with telling them how to operate their business, other than the transport for the jail. They've been having them call the court has been extremely helpful. It sounds like a minor thing. They call and contact a clerk or a judge the day before. We know, maybe that attorney has faxed in a request for an adjournment, something happened. You have it that day, you can call the transport off. I mean, it works pretty well.
And then one other thing you mentioned was to engage better use of technology. Can you give me specifically what kinds of things are you talking about?
Well, I mean, the state in general has been moving us in that direction. Tickets are received now for most courts electronically, right from the officers. We don't have to enter them into a computer or have a clerk enter them. That's done immediately. Our monthly reports, again, to the state comptroller's office electronically, which in the last, I want to say, has been 10 years maybe that's been going on. The municipality gets to keep that money rather than sending it to the state and waiting for it to return, as long as you do it electronically. So they get a letter back monthly or quarterly from the comptroller saying, okay, this is your share, send us the rest. Again, those things are helpful.
And then, go ahead, Judge Bauman.
Well, yep. One thing I would like to add, I would like to see, is that all interrogations are videotaped in order to assure that the defendant is not being coerced, is not being denied his counsel. And I think it also helps the district attorney and law enforcement that there can be no claim of abuse. I think it's a win-win situation. I think the time has come and the technology, of course, is available.
Mm-hmm. And we are recording our proceedings now.
All proceedings?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And are the, with respect to electronic records, is any of you familiar with electronic record systems in the local courts working on a daily basis or any kind of basis?
I've spoken to a judge who's done that. I just got a scanner myself a month ago. I haven't really been using it long enough to say that it works well or doesn't, so I can't really speak to that. But again, that would be great. I mean, we still have to keep documents, obviously, but it would be helpful.
And we just started working on
scanning as well. So we're going in that direction of digitizing things.
And will that then be available, just in other words, so a litigant wouldn't have to go to the courthouse and look through records? They could just simply come online, use some sort of a password similar to what we do, and have access? Or how is that going to work?
I'm not sure we're at that juncture yet, but this is obviously a precursor to making that kind of a thing available. Yeah.
Right. Judge Bauman, you were...
Yes, one of the things that I'm going to advise all the magistrates when we have our meeting in December is that make sure that you replace the disc every 6 months, because I had an arraignment last night, the disc hadn't been replaced in a year, and I couldn't record the proceeding.
Okay, let me pass it to my right, Judge Poole.
I just have one question, and it's just an opinion. I'm seeking your opinion. What is your opinion of, for instance, a judge being able to access the court records from their home computers, which would then enable attorneys, probation department, whatever other county agency, law enforcement, to call the judge at home? Because a lot of your court clerks are part-time and they have a full-time job. They're not able to correspond with these agencies in the evenings most of the time. And it would be very nice, at least for me, because I'm retired now, so it would enable the attorneys to be able to call and say, you know, Your Honor, we're not going to be able to make court this evening. Can we adjourn the matter? Granted, that's an ex parte. However, there are a lot of judges that don't have clerks. I'd just like your opinion on that.
Out of necessity, I have my computer at home. We did not have high-speed internet at my court for a very long time. Till very recently, the town opted to pay to install a satellite so we could do that. My little corner of the town where I lived was the only location that had high-speed internet, so I brought my computer home so that I could download tickets electronically and send information on my monthly report. So I was doing that, but not having them call me at home. I check my answering system regularly so I could
respond.
Well,
we had that capability as well, but I think that too would certainly assist. And that way, the day before and or the day of, let's say I could run a calendar and I could call corrections and say, I'm calling to confirm transport tonight for so-and-so. If I had an attorney call me and say, no agreement has been reached, there's no need for us to appear, I could then immediately adjourn the matter. I could call the corrections agency and say, no need to transport. And then either email them or fax them another securing order for the next appearance date.
Yes, Judge Bauman.
Betty, I think what you have is a good idea, and as long as the Office of Court Administration can be satisfied that there's security and that no one else is going to tap into this, I see.
Yeah, password protected, and obviously your antivirus, et cetera.
The judge is willing to do it. That's great.
Pete, you have that capability.
Pardon me?
You have that capability. Mr. Chairman, you know, I'm the crazy uncle in the attic.
Yeah,
and,
go ahead.
I have a court clerk who is technologically savvy, and he has, in fact, set that up with one of these remote systems. And as soon as I learn to work it, we'll be doing it. He's teaching me, yes.
I just want to make sure that it's okay to do it.
Well, password protected and so forth, but remote access to the SEI system, yes.
What you're suggesting, just so we are all on the same page, that technologically there may be ways for judges to actually work out of their home for a number of functions that would then save a lot of time in terms of they wouldn't have to go to the court and work there. They could work.
As a matter of fact, yes, and the resource center, even in when going to what I refer to euphemistically as judge school, suggests that when we have an out of after hours arraignment, that we go online and pull down rap sheets and other information about the case before going into the court. So they encourage that, and it is possible to do that. So technology is arriving.
All right, fair enough. We want to keep moving, but go ahead, Judge Bauman.
One quick thing, Betty, before you go ahead, and apparently you've already gone ahead.
No, I haven't, actually. Okay. No, I certainly would not.
I would call the Office of Court Administration, tell them what you propose, and get their blessing. Fair enough.
Okay. Division of Technology, you might, check in with them. Okay.
Betty, do you have other questions?
Or no, that's it. Thank you.
Hi, and the separation of courts and the rest of government works very well in our town, because as the supervisor, I know very little about the courts, although I hear very few complaints, too, and they seem to be doing a very good job. Just for the record, I'd like to just say that as part of this task force, we came in with no predetermined outcome or anything, and from my point of view, it doesn't seem like attorney versus non-attorney justices are really there. Doesn't seem to be any consensus on that, so I don't think that's coming out of this group at all. And also, even going into this at the beginning, I think we realized that there wouldn't be a cost savings. I don't think that's our main goal, but to make sure that things are equitable and that we're doing things as efficiently as possible. So I really liked, Judge Davenport, your list of suggestions of what we could do better. And I think part of the outcome of this will be better communication and just sort of us being aware of what we can do better. So this is very helpful to have you here. But I do have some questions, and again, I'm the most ignorant of the court system here, so bear with me. But I keep hearing that local courts are important because they're closer to the people, but I can't quite grasp that, because it does seem like so many of the people that come to our courts are not from our town. So that doesn't. I guess I don't understand the logic to that. So. Could you explain that a little bit more? I mean, how does closer to the people benefit? I don't know how many, but quite a few that are from out of our town.
Still the people. In my community, we have 4,000 people living in Liberty, and we have 10 miles of Route 17 going through Liberty. So we have a lot of people who are not associated with the town who were picked up by the state police or a local police because of traffic violations. And frequently what happens is that they will observe the smell of marijuana in the car or see a weapon in the back seat and so on and so forth. And from that, an arrest can involving a criminal matter. But I would say about half of the litigants in my court are local. You have landlord-tenant matters, always local. You have village ordinance matters, almost always local. And then you have matters between the residents of the town. The only non-local things would be coming off the highway.
But what? Just let me interrupt. But why is it better to have a judge that is I don't understand the logic of having the judge know the people to provide.
No one said know the people. I said it's closest to the people. In other words, the majority of people in my community will experience justice in a town or village court before they see justice in a county court or a family court or a Supreme Court. That's basically it. It's probably maybe 75% of those who go through the court system have their first experience in a town or village court.
So does it provide more fair justice to be local, or is it, I mean, what, I still am not quite grasping where.
Yeah, if I can add one thing, I mean, one is accountability. As a citizen, are you going to be more able to control the judge from your town, and will your citizens be able to do that better than and easier than they'll be able to control some judge that's elected countywide and sits in the city of Ithaca? And is only reviewed every 10 years by your citizens, not every four like we are.
Right.
So, I mean, that's part of it, too.
How is accountability for the citizens of the Village of Liberty a benefit to the kid from the Bronx
where
the cops smelled marijuana in the car?
Well, I don't think you can make that argument. I understand. I mean, we're a pretty transient society. I believe that that's obviously a point.
Judge, is Lake Como... In fact.
We
owe her a debt because, you know, every drop of water that
falls. Fall Creek begins, that's
starts
right.
Starts at Lake Coma.
Please.
Thank you.
Watch those boaters.
Well, that's a fair point. Knowing your community, Lake Como is a fine example, lovely little lake, very small, very dense population. We have constant zoning battles around the lake. And doesn't seem like much of a population center, but in fact it is. We have a lot of dog cases. We have a landlord-tenant. We have people who come in. We have boating. We have fishing. We have a lot of issues, snowmobile races and such. Things that are unique to an individual community that the judge is more aware of if they're a citizen of that community. So as Judge Brockway and Judge Bauman said, to be accountable, there are a lot of definitions of that accountability, right, to my way of thinking. If I know, you know, again, as a town supervisor, I'm sure you're controlling funds. You're working on a budget. We know if for next year, when we have the opportunity to apply for a grant, we look at things that benefit not just the court, but the town as well. We share
That's
facilities.
True. That's true, yeah.
So to know what a community needs, like as part of my JCAP grant last year, we received new lighting for the courtroom, which doubles as a meeting room for our senior citizens, which they appreciated greatly. And the quilting people meet there. And, I mean, again, you know what your citizenry needs. There are benefits.
Yeah, and we have benefited from the JCAP grants that we meet in the same place that the court meets. So we have benefited in that way. And I don't, I mean, I'm very supportive of our court system that we have in our little town. But so I hope that none of the comments that I'm making are sound disparaging at all. But I just have... These questions just keep lingering. One of the other ones is that, you know, judges come in front of the voters every 4 years. Well, any judge, whether it's county or local, will I don't know if there are any appointed judges, but any that are voted on will come in front of the voters every whatever years. But again,
10 years for county and city judges.
Okay, but
14
I mean that's
years
the
for Supreme.
You know, often when there are elections and our justices are up for election, people will come to me and say, well, who should I vote for? And I say, you know, how would anybody know unless you were in front of unless you were an attorney representing people in front of that judge or, you know, a defendant? It just seems like a really hard way. I mean, I don't know how you would judge a judge, really. It seems like a very difficult thing, anyways, as a statement. How would we judge a judge?
How would we judge you as a supervisor?
I mean, I put out a newsletter of all the things that we're doing and the grants that we have, and, you know, here's what your highway department is, and don't forget the state is offering this. And so, I mean, we're allowed to talk about what we're doing to the public. I think that courts are in a much different situation. I mean, we're supposed to be talking to the people. I don't think the judges are.
Come and sit in on a court session.
Well, no, I mean, I could, but that's, you know, the voting public, you're not going to get everybody to come in and sit on. It's just impractical. So that's just one of those things that people keep saying that, you know, you vote for them every whatever years, but how do you judge them?
Jason, go ahead.
I have some experience with this because the first time I ever ran for anything was Justice in Dryden. And compared to running for town board or supervisor, you can't say a whole lot. And on top, but statewide, I mean, you're presuming that there's actually contested elections for many of these seats, and there just simply aren't. Even in this county, we don't have contested justice elections often.
All right, let's...
I'm sorry, I have maybe another. The other thing that I worry about slightly, although again, our justices are really great at coming out, and we have a full-time clerk, so we have the luxury of people being able to come in at any time, but the access issue, it sounds like for some of the smaller courts, is an issue, which maybe wouldn't be the case if it was a district court or not so.
No. I'm not sure what you mean by access.
Well, okay, so once a week. I mean, the courts, well, we have twice a week because we have two judges. But so that seems just logically to be limited access if you're only open once a week as opposed to a full-time court.
Well, I can tell you about the Town of Liberty.
Let's. I'm going to interrupt you guys because we are getting towards the end. So let's try to make these relatively brief answers because I think there are some other questions that we'd like to address. Okay. Thank you.
I have on Tuesdays my criminal calendar, and any other times during the week when I'm needed, I will be there.
I think it's probably locality by locality issue, and if there's a group, whether it's DAs or attorneys or probation people who are somehow having difficulty getting in touch with an attorney or with a judge rather to get paperwork in or out or whatever it is, I'm not sure what the issue is you're raising, but then I think those issues can be and have been historically worked out reasonably easily. And without a big ton of bureaucracy, which if you're having that problem with a district court, you might have more of an issue, frankly. And before I forget about it, I assume the panel has some idea of the cost of a district to staff and pay for a district judge. And I understand it's not all about the money, but a lot of it is. But the number I heard when I was seeking, as president of the family court judges of the state, the number I kept hearing when we were asking for more judges was the cost that OCA posits for that cost is $1 million per judge. And you probably have that number somewhere, but I wanted to know that. And that's with staffing and all that. And so that's certainly, and the place to put that judge and staffing and everything else. So that's not easy.
Liz, any other questions? I wanted to touch on one thing very quickly. Does the association, again, in the broader sense, not just anecdotally, but has the association taken a position with respect to, if not a district court, the idea of consolidating the prosecution of, say, misdemeanor-level offenses or DWI-type cases, or doing all evictions, in other words, in some sort of a centralized part countywide, whether it then would be housed in an available city court or even a part of the county court? In other words, has the association analyzed that? Have you studied it? Have you taken a position with respect to any of that?
I found through experience as an attorney and as a judge that there's no problem. If there's a summary proceeding that must be held before the court, it'll be scheduled and it'll be held. The same thing with criminal matters, same thing with civil matters and vehicle and traffic matters. Whatever comes before us, we'll handle.
But you are a lawyer-trained judge of great experience. Judge Davenport is a lawyer-trained judge.
No, she's not.
Not a lawyer-trained judge.
Oh, good. That's good to hear that. And Judge Brockway is, and I guess my concern is, my question is, but I'm not even here to debate that. I just want to know, as a matter of resource, as the association, is there a report that we're missing? Is there a position paper that was generated? Is there a study that's been done where the association or some committee of the association has looked into this kind of realignment? And taken a position, because if there is, I'd like to see it. If there isn't, I'm not saying there ought to be. I just want to know if there is, that's all.
I'm not aware of any current position. I mean, we advocate for the current Town and Village justices.
The system
so
as it is.
The system as it is my right. understanding. I mean, there have been consolidations of towns, you know, that's permitted in the Uniform Justice Court Act. I have not heard any negative connotation or position that the association has taken on that. That's a matter for the voters in that community.
Right, and then a further answer to that, Ray, for example, when I was sitting as a Supreme Court judge, I sat for a number of years, before the state ran out of money, running the Integrated Domestic Violence Court, which brought all the domestic violence matters in the county, including town and village courts, to one central place. And so, but as an association, I don't think the SMA has ever adopted any kind of a paper on whether they thought that was generally a good idea or not.
But as a spokesperson, elected functions and consolidating, like domestic violence, is it
correct? That's a loaded question. I think a lot of it, I think a lot of it depends upon the demographics of the particular county, depends on the stakeholders, it depends on a whole host of things.
There are circumstances under which you think it's a good idea.
Perhaps, and they're certainly worth talking about, but, having done the IDV, I'm not sure I'm that sold on it, to be honest with you, as a Supreme Court judge or as a village judge.
How about a DWI court? Same question.
Same answer. I think in some communities it may be effective, it may work, it may be the most efficient way to handle things from the point of view of all the stakeholders in a particular county, it might be. But I can certainly see circumstances where it would not be as well.
The other is the eviction. There seems to be some complexity with evictions, and I'm just curious what your view is on that, or the association's view. Or maybe I'm misstating the complexity notion. Do you guys feel that they're readily and easily handled in your courts, or do you
absolutely
find...
Absolutely.
I have not had a problem, or a problem with access. I haven't had anyone complain about that.
Okay.
And we've tried in the past to raise the dollar amount, haven't we, as an association?
Yeah, we have. Presently, the maximum amount that you could sue for in civil court and bring it before a town or village judge is $3,000. We tried to expand that to make it, I think, $5,000, but somehow it just didn't go through. And by expanding it to $5,000, you're taking a load off higher courts, and you can have more litigation of a civil matter decided in town and village court.
Filing fees are much less.
Are there any other
questions?
And the
access to justice
is
much quicker.
Is there anything else that we've missed that you would like to address before we close for the evening?
Just one quick thing.
Oh, Michael, I'm sorry. Michael.
Would you indulge me, Ray, please? Just like one question about the...
Right. This is the Michael Lane. He's the chair of the county legislature. He's also an attorney.
Thank you. On the district courts, I heard you talk about Suffolk and Nassau, which are huge counties, and they have the lower level courts for traffic and things. Is there anything that prohibits the district courts to be able to handle those matters? And I'm comparing them, for example, to the city court here, where within its jurisdiction handles all of those matters from right down whatever isn't in county court, it's handled in the city court in the city. Is there any reason that a district court couldn't be set up to do the same in the rural areas?
Well, the charter behind it. District court.
Here, please use the microphone if you could, please. Thanks.
The charter behind the civil district court is to have the judge work 5 days a week from 9 to 5. Doesn't work on weekends, and this is where town and village courts fill in. We do work on weekends. We committed, we could sign bail receipts, we can arraign defendants. Picture someone getting arrested on a Friday night when there's no district court. Without the town and village court, they have to stay in jail over the weekend when it's totally unnecessary.
Is that what happens with cities?
In the city court?
Yeah.
City courts have minimum jurisdiction of what, $15,000? Maximum jurisdiction. And city courts really are an extension of town and village courts with greater jurisdiction.
Thank you.
All right. I think that wraps it up for the evening. I want to thank Judge Bauman, Justice Bauman, Justice Davenport, Justice Chernish. Do you have something you want to add?
Mr. Chairman, yeah. Two things. One is my court expects to go paperless first quarter next year. Interestingly enough, I called the Office of Technology and told them I wanted to do what I wanted to do. I wanted some scanners and I wanted some monitors. And how could I put them in a JCAP grant? And they said, gee, we'll send them to you. 2 days later, UPS brought me 4 scanners and 4 monitors. Gee, they had them on hand. I have been found myself in the position of being chair of the local county magistrates association task force, committee, I guess it would be, to present positive ideas to your task force on ways in which we can make the town and village magistrates more effective and more efficient. So I would like to take this opportunity to formally request an opportunity to make a presentation to the task force at the appropriate time, probably early next year, depending on what your schedule is.
That would be very welcome, because I think we are, in fact, one of the points that I'd like to make when we ask whether we've added value is I think that we need, as a group, to assess where we are at this point, what other data we wish to hear from, and other resources we wish to tap, and then focus in that manner. And this would be helpful for us.
As Judge Davenport indicated, she met with us, what was it, last Saturday? 2 weeks ago, when about a dozen of the members of the county association met and talked about these things and began to generate some ideas for positive response. So we're going to take that and begin to refine them, put together.
That will be very helpful. Thank you very much.
And we've already begun to implement some of those things.
Judge Bauman, you had one more thing?
Yeah, I just would like to leave you with one thought. Over the years, the lawyers and the judges that I've come in contact with, in discussing other judges, we never think of a judge being a lawyer judge or a lay judge. We just think of them as being a judge because they do a good job and they seek justice, and they do justice.
Thank you. Thank you. That's a nice summary. Judge Brockway, also thank you for joining us this evening. And a quick assessment from the panel, left to right. Jason, have we added value this evening?
Yes.
Glenn?
Yes, I'm looking forward to getting starting to focus the topics on which we're going to really make decisions one way or the other on recommendations.
Mark?
Presented to us today and added value.
And I would echo that sentiment. Betty?
As would I.
Liz?
Yes, and it's always a learning experience. Thank you.
All right, folks, we are concluding for this evening. The next meeting is December 2nd. It is here, 4:30 p.m., and we are going to hear from the Assigned Counsel Program, also Lance Salisbury, and I think that'll be it for that evening, but we are going to work in Judge Chernish and the Local Magistrates Association. All right, thank you very much. All right.
Can you stay for dinner? Have to be in the Public Division First Department.
Jason, are you keeping busy?
Jason,
45 years ago.
That would have been 70.
Right after Woodstock.
Thank you. Before then,
where'd you grow?
Really? Really? This morning I had one of those things.
And
felony.
One of the people responsible for becoming a lawyer, you won't have known about because by 1970, he was still there.
Lives on my street.
Incredible hero. Give you a story about Leslie Bean. One time I was talking to the appellate division to argue an appeal. Leslie Bean was showing up too, and he asked me to drive his car because he was getting on his knees. And I drove up there. Not the case that
I was just the same, and it took the case officer. Well, he was out of pocket for an hour.
I was thinking, what am I missing? I mean, he's arguing an appeal before the television is. And I told him what the case is. And he says, well, who do I represent? I told him. And he just is nodding his head. And we got up to Albany. Our case is called. And he stood up and gave the most brilliant presentation to any appellate court.
Yeah, Oz was a great man. Great lawyer.
Did you know Sidney Applebaum?
Yeah, quite well.
Sidney was my partner.
Oh, is that right? How old is Sidney now?
Sidney died about 18 years ago.
18 years ago. Well, my father.
All right. I'm really a new kid. I mean, this area.
I know.
Yeah.
Newfield. That still makes me.
Another person responsible.
How long have they been generation?
Yeah.
He's a nice guy.
So. Yeah, nice guy. Good. Thank you for coming. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for coming out. That's really nice of you.
If you need us again, just give us a call.
These meetings have been so interesting listening to this comment.
Thank you very much, sir. I couldn't miss the chance to talk about Roscoe Diner.
Is there anybody in the world that doesn't
know? Oh, I don't think so. With the pies and the cakes.
Good.
given.
Shopping.
Yeah.
And so what am I going to do? You know, if I can be flipped about it, I said, I'm going to call the guy that I'm just going to work.